This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, April 17th, 2013. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums. Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas's Women's Giving Circle. AETN, Fayetteville Public Library, and KUAF invite the public to a free screening of The Island President as part of Community Cinema Sunday, April 21st at 2 p.m. at the Fayetteville Public Library. In this film, Maldives President Mohamed Nasheed confronts the problem of survival as his country and everyone in it could be erased from the map. Following the film, KUAF's Katie Hendrickson will moderate a panel discussion about the topic. AETN.org/community cinema for more information.
Today's edition of Ozarks at Large is up in the air. First, we examine the high airfares at Northwest Arkansas Regional Airport and what can be done about lowering the prices. Plus, our birdman Joe Neal returns with a lesson in upside-down birding. Local musician John Tuhawk stops by the studio to discuss his latest album and more.
First, the Arkansas chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union is filing a lawsuit in U.S. District Court challenging a new abortion law that's among the most restrictive in the nation. The ban was passed by the Arkansas legislature last month when the Arkansas House of Representatives voted to override Governor Mike Beebe's veto of the law. It bans most abortions beginning at the 12th week of pregnancy. Rita Sklar with the Arkansas ACLU says politicians are trying to take away a woman's ability to make personal, private decisions.
We are asking the court to block an attempt to essentially outlaw all abortions past 12 weeks, so early that a woman might not know the complete health and status of her own pregnancy. It is a clear violation of the U.S. Supreme Court rulings dating back 40 years.
Jerry Cox with the Family Council, a group based in Little Rock who supports the legislation, says he's not surprised by the lawsuit.
That's what the ACLU always does. And it's par for the course for them to take a law that's passed by a legislative body and try to get the courts to strike it down because they don't like it.
North Dakota recently passed a measure banning the procedure as early as 6 weeks into pregnancy. The Arkansas measure is scheduled to take effect July 18th.
Several tax cuts will advance to the Arkansas Senate after approval yesterday in the State House. Measures to cut the state's income, capital gains taxes, and utility taxes paid by manufacturers all passed. Speaking on the House floor for a measure cutting the state income tax, Representative Charlie Collins, a Republican from Fayetteville, said it's time to let job creators know that Arkansas is open for business.
I think one of the things we need to do to turn Arkansas into a good jobs magnet is to get our income tax rate, that top rate, which is currently 7%, more in line with the states around us.
Speaking against the proposal, Representative Les Carnine, a Republican from Rogers, said he is for the cuts and think they should happen, but not without reconciling the state's budget needs.
We need to cut taxes which directly create jobs. We have those on our docket, and I will vote for every one of those. This particular bill is not one of those.
The cuts come as part of a $100 million package of cuts the governor has said could be offset by implementing a plan to expand private health insurance for the state's working poor with federal money intended for Medicaid.
Arkansas is set to provide a new steel company with $125 million in financing and tax breaks to help build a mill in the northeastern part of the state now that the legislature has given final approval to the plan.
Prepare the machine, Mr. Clerk. Cast the ballots with 81 yeas, 9 nays, and 0 present. You passed the bill in the emergency clause.
House lawmakers yesterday passed a Senate-approved budget bill to fund Governor Mike Beebe's proposal to provide Big River Steel with a loan and pay some construction costs of a $1.1 billion steel mill the company wants to build in Osceola. In exchange, the company promises to create at least 525 permanent jobs with an average annual wage of at least $75,000, twice the state's average. Big River Steel has said it wants to close the deal in the third quarter of this year.
Arkansas Attorney General Dustin McDaniel has rejected the latest proposed ballot title that aims to legalize medical marijuana in the state. According to an opinion released yesterday from the Attorney General's office, the 353-word ballot title submitted by Arkansans for Compassionate Care was too ambiguous, and McDaniel pointed specifically to 38 areas of ambiguity as reasons for his rejection of the ballot initiative. A similar measure failed to pass a majority of Arkansas voters last year. The Arkansas Medical Marijuana Act failed by a slim margin of 48.4% for and 51.6% against.
The longest-serving faculty member of the Faye Jones School of Architecture will soon retire. John Crone has taught landscape architecture since becoming a full-time faculty member in 1980. He'll retire at the end of this academic year after teaching nearly every class in the department, as well as in every campus location that has housed the department, including Hill, Vol Walker, Carnell, and Memorial Halls. Though he will remain on staff through the end of the school year, a retirement ceremony will be held beginning 12:30 Friday afternoon.
The Fayetteville District Court courtroom has a new name after a walk-on resolution was accepted last night by the Fayetteville City Council. Aldermen voted unanimously to rename the courtroom the Fayetteville District Judge Rudy Moore Courtroom. Longtime District Judge Rudy Moore passed away last week, and Fayetteville Mayor Lionel Jordan says he knew Judge Moore for nearly 50 years.
I thought he was not only a great judge, but he was a great family man. He was a great person. And I thought the service that we went to on Saturday was quite touching and a great honor to a great man.
Also being remembered today, famed sportscaster and former Razorback Pat Summerall died yesterday at his home in Dallas. Most remember Summerall for his 40 years as a play-by-play announcer for everything from Super Bowls to the Masters and the U.S. Open. Prior to his broadcasting career, Summerall began his sports career at the University of Arkansas as a defensive end, tight end, and place kicker, playing for the Razorbacks from 1949 to 1951, during which time he helped the Hogs gain their first victory in Fayetteville against Texas. After graduating, he went to the Detroit Lions in the fourth round of the 1952 NFL draft and spent the next 10 years at Detroit, the Chicago Cardinals, and the New York Giants before moving into the broadcast booth. He has been inducted into both the Arkansas Sports Hall of Fame and the University of Arkansas Sports Hall of Fame. He was 82 years old.
The 12th-ranked Razorback baseball team dropped both games of a doubleheader yesterday against the unranked Nebraska Cornhuskers in games played in Lincoln. Even more notable about the losses is that in the first game, three Nebraska pitchers combined to no-hit Arkansas. The first time Arkansas has been no-hit, it's believed, ever, at least since official record-keeping began for the team more than 40 years ago. In the second game, Nebraska broke a 1-1 tie in the bottom of the eighth and held on to defeat the Razorbacks 4-2. Arkansas returns to Baum Stadium Friday to host a three-game set against SEC rival Texas A&M. And the Northwest Arkansas Naturals had their own upsetting loss last night. The Nats fell to the Frisco Rough Riders 14-7 after blowing a 7-0 lead. The Nats return to Arvest Ballpark tomorrow night to open a four-game series against the Tulsa Drillers.
Tonight, a 70% chance of showers and a low of 49 in Northwest Arkansas, and a 60% chance of showers and a low of 53 degrees in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, 80% chance of rain with accumulation of 1 to 2 inches possible. Highs from 56 degrees in Northwest Arkansas to 65 degrees in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow night, a 70% chance of rain with lows from 29 in Northwest Arkansas to 35 in the Arkansas River Valley. A recent study by the Northwest Arkansas Council determined something that many frequent flyers in the area already know, that airfare is too high. But as Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis reports, the price of those fares can't be lowered overnight.
Northwest Arkansas Regional Airport will soon have a nonstop connection to Los Angeles. American Airlines recently announced that Bentonville is one of a handful of connections to which the carrier will connect with nonstop routes from its hub at Los Angeles International Airport. The addition of LAX as a destination for XNA travelers increases the total number of destinations served by the airport to 15. But American Airlines is only one of five carriers that flies out of the regional airport, and only one of those five carriers is a so-called low-cost carrier. Rob Smith of the Northwest Arkansas Council says that the scarcity of different carriers at the airport is one of the reasons that fares from XNA are typically higher than that of surrounding regional airports.
Well, I guess you have to look at it from what XNA is. XNA is an airport that's really dominated by business travel. Airlines are able to come in there and they're able to fill up planes at these prices. And in many ways, you can't really blame an airline for filling seats at the highest dollar amount they can. That's kind of how the world works. That's capitalism, I guess.
Just more than 541,000 paying passengers flew from XNA last year. Smith says that according to a recent study by the council, the average fare at XNA is $154 higher than that of the average fare nationwide. Those figures mean that Northwest Arkansas travelers, both business and leisure, paid $83 million more than the national average to fly from the closest regional airport. Scott Van Lanningham is the executive director of XNA, and even he admits that the fares are too high out of the airport.
We have known for some time that the cost has been going up. It continues to go up. The problem is because of our high level of business travel, the airlines are filling up their planes, and we've got to try and introduce some competition into the market to get the prices at a more reasonable level that folks can afford.
The Northwest Arkansas Council study regarding current air service to the area was conducted in February with representatives from the Walmart supplier community and other major businesses in the area. The employers surveyed represented 63,000 of the total flights out of the airport last year, or about 12% of all flights. The chief complaint that the council received was that more competition is needed on more flights, specifically on flights to Chicago, Atlanta, Dallas, and New York City. Smith says that in order to provide that competition, XNA must court another low-cost carrier, particularly one that could offer daily service to and from Northwest Arkansas.
XNA already has Allegiant, but what we're looking for is daily low-cost service. Certainly Allegiant's valuable to XNA, but it doesn't provide that daily service that a lot of business travelers need. They need to be able to go out on a Monday and come back on a Wednesday if that's necessary. And we think that it'll drive down the cost of having employees work in Northwest Arkansas for Walmart suppliers, frankly, for every company. It'll happen for just individuals who travel. I mean, the cost of everything goes down.
But Van Lanningham says that enticing a low-cost carrier isn't an easy task. It took 2 years of negotiations to get Allegiant to service XNA, and airport officials had to tailor its gate fees and other terms specifically to cater to the carrier's 2 to 3 day a week schedule at the airport. But aside from tough negotiations, Van Lanningham says that XNA isn't alone in its search for low-cost carriers.
There are airports throughout the country that are going through the same thing. And so we're in competition with airports all over the country. There are a limited number of the low-cost carriers. There are only 6 of them, actually.
Those 6 low-cost carriers include JetBlue, Frontier, Spirit, Virgin America, and of course Southwest Airlines. Although the question remains the same, Van Lanningham says that the likelihood is slim that Southwest will fly from Northwest Arkansas anytime soon.
Until relatively recent, about a year ago, we didn't have any more gates for any other carriers, be it Southwest or anybody. But number two, they are basically cutting back. We are a relatively small airline market, 500 and some odd thousand enplanements a year. So if you are a low-cost carrier and you have a fixed number of assets, you put those into the larger markets where you get a better return. You're more likely to fill up your airplane. So part of the problem has been one of we simply haven't been big enough. The market is growing, and we are seeing indications that more and more of our folks are going to other places, and that's what led us to conclude we really need to go after an all-out effort to try and recruit a low-cost carrier into XNA.
But overall, Van Lanningham says that negotiations to entice another low-cost carrier to Northwest Arkansas will take some time, though airport officials are entertaining all possibilities, even potential deals with startup low-cost carriers. But he says that when another carrier does fly out of the area, the average ticket price for flights from XNA could drop anywhere from $40 to $140. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Timothy Dennis.
They call it the greenest building in the country.
This is a building that functions like an organism. That's to say, it has ears, it has eyes, it has a sophisticated nervous system, and it has a brain. It functions very much like the Douglas fir forest functioned when it was here 150 years ago.
Earth Day founder Dennis Hayes and his new Bullet Center in Seattle. I'm Steve Hurwood. Join me next time on Living on Earth from PRI.
Living on Earth, Sunday afternoons at 5 here on KUAF 91.3 FM.
A little more than a year ago, a group of business leaders formed the Arkansas Aerospace Alliance, a trade association focused on developing the aerospace and aviation industries in Arkansas. Here are some basics about the industry. Data from Arkansas officials indicate that the state's aerospace and aviation industry has about 180 companies, employs more than 9,000 Arkansans, and accounts for annual exports of more than $1.8 billion. Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas recently spoke to Chad Causey, the recently hired executive director for the Arkansas Aerospace Alliance, to learn more.
Tell me what type of companies we're talking about when we talk aerospace, aviation. Some people might think space, the final frontier. Obviously, we think of Dassault Falcon Jet, but there's much more to it than that.
Sure. Obviously, space is a part of it. Not so much here in Arkansas, but there are companies throughout the country that focus on NASA projects, for example. But here in Arkansas, it's a very versatile industry. We have advanced manufacturers, as you've mentioned, around 180 manufacturers in the state making some type of a component for aircraft or defense products. We have companies that range from finishing out major private jetliners to defense companies down in Camden that are making missiles or components for missiles, not to mention all of the fixed base operators that are on airports out there providing fuel and other services, mm-hmm. And maintenance repair operations that are throughout the state that service existing airlines.
Why is this an industry that we want to see develop and grow? What's the growth potential in here? Why is that so critical? Why is it not a failing manufacturing base?
Sure. Well, these are wonderful jobs and great jobs for Arkansans to have. So certainly from that standpoint, the more companies that we could get to grow here in Arkansas or locate here creates great opportunities to create great jobs for Arkansans. We look at a lot of the impacts that and pressures on the aerospace industry, and you know the economy is one of those things. The economy is on its swing up, we believe, and we also look at in the aerospace industries what are called clusters, and there are some big ones like out in Washington State where they finish out major jet airliners. Mm-hmm. Here in Arkansas, we have somewhat of a strategic position here, and what we would think would be a good location to grow the existing cluster that we have with both our defense industries located down around Camden, mm-hmm. but also with Dassault Falcon Jet here in Little Rock and the manufacturers that service those industries. We are strategically located here in Arkansas along a aerospace axis that runs from roughly southern Iowa down through Kansas and into the Dallas-Fort Worth area where they build a lot of fighter jets for the U.S. Air Force. We are strategically located along a lot of points where we and our manufacturers here in the aerospace industry in the state can service them at minimal logistical challenges there. We can get to all those points quickly, and there's some real potential with regionally where we're located.
You mentioned earlier too fixed-based operators. These are local airports basically where people fly in and fly out. Now there have been, because of the sequester, there's been two potential closures, one in Fayetteville, one in Texarkana, that I know some congressional officials have been fighting. There's been some concern raised about that. Are two towers in Arkansas really that critical?
Well, I think so. When you look at it from a safety standpoint, we do have a significant number of planes flying in and out of those airports. And our industry sees it as a safety issue from the commercial and private aviation side of things. It's our understanding that those tower closures will be postponed at least for a time. Members of our congressional delegation, including Senators Pryor and Senator Bozeman, as well as Congressman Cotton from the 4th District, have introduced legislation or co-sponsored legislation that would require FAA to not close those towers and keep them open, and certainly our industry appreciates their efforts in looking out for the safety of the aviation community.
Grant Tenniel, the state's jobs chief, told a gathering of your alliance just a few weeks ago up in Fort Smith that he wanted to see Arkansas grow this aerospace industry at a faster rate than some of our sister states. Is that a tax code change? Is it some sort of economic incentive that needs to be in place? What has to happen to accelerate past Kansas and parts of Texas and southern Iowa and Missouri and things that are along that axis that you talked about?
Sure. Well, we're growing. In 2012, we, as you noted, we had $1.8 billion in value-added exports that came from the aerospace industry. Largest value-added export for the state of Arkansas. That ranked us about 11th or 12th nationally. Now, there are four or five states, including Washington State, Texas, California, Connecticut, and some others, Pennsylvania, Colorado, Florida, that are bigger than we are, but we have some room for growth there. For some of the regional advantages that we have, we can service with our manufacturers some of those major buyers out there in Kansas and Texas with our parts that we're making here. But I think it's a combination of the two things. Obviously, the tax code's important. General Assembly right now is considering a couple of different revisions to the tax code, including tax cuts to manufacturing.
Right.
Manufacturers. That would be a positive impact on our aerospace manufacturers, as well as a potential tax exemption on repair and replacement of parts.
Chad Causey is the executive director for the Arkansas Aerospace Alliance. He recently spoke to Roby Brock from our content partner, Talk Business. Support for Talk Business Arkansas on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from four offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com.
And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at BankOzarks.com. And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. More at AECC.com.
It is Wednesday, April 17th, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us is Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
I don't know that I understand what a jam rocker is.
Okay.
Like a jam band?
Yeah,
like a jam band. I know that Umphreys McGee is from Chicago, and I know that they've been around long enough that I recognize their name.
Yeah.
And they play at Wakarusa, and they have this little tradition that they sort of preview what they're going to do at Wakarusa at George's Majestic Lounge.
Usually draws a pretty good crowd, too.
And it's time for that to happen tonight and tomorrow night at the Dixon Street Music Venue. Tickets for the 9 o'clock shows are $25 at georgesmajesticlounge.com. Tomorrow, Fayetteville Farmers Market.
Yeah, that's right.
7 o'clock to 1 o'clock, downtown Fayetteville Square. Likely it will not snow tomorrow.
Likely.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, likely.
Although it did snow on last Thursday morning's market.
Yes.
And there's an artist reception tomorrow night for Jerry Stecca's Tree Wraps from 5 to 7 at the Fort Smith Regional Art Museum.
Oh, I saw a picture of these. It looks really cool.
Sid King did a story in the paper, and it's
clothespins.
Yeah, it looks very interesting. It's at the RAM, right?
It's at the Regional Art Museum in Fort Smith, and that is tomorrow night from 5 to 7.
All right.
You need to call and make yourself a reservation, so to speak, so they'll know how many noses to count.
Gotcha.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Next time on Ask Me Another, we get some parental tips from actor, comedian, and long-suffering father of two, Michael Ian Black.
When they say they hate you, it's best to just go, I hate me too.
Join Michael and me, Ophira Eisenberg, for an hour of puzzles, word games, and trivia. Game on!
Ask Me Another, Saturday mornings at 11 on KUAF 91.3 FM. The University of Arkansas Fort Smith's 32nd season of entertainment presents Choral Glory, an evening of remembrance, Friday, April 26th at 7:30 p.m. at the Fort Smith Convention Center. The UAFS choirs, along with a chamber orchestra and soloists, will focus on remembrance. The evening will feature the Requiem by Maurice Durufle. Tickets and more information are available at uafs.edu.
Earlier this year, the Ozark Natural Science Center announced it was suspending operations because of fiscal constraints. For more than 20 years, the ONSC, located on nearly 500 acres in wooded Madison County, has served as a site for members of the public, especially school children, to connect with nature. Thousands have spent time at the campus since it opened. For some, an overnight stay at ONSC was the first time away from an urban setting. Reaction to the announcement of the suspension of operations earlier this year, a sort of organizational near-death experience, was swift and passionate. Today, the ONSC Board of Directors is beginning a capital campaign effort to raise money to keep ONSC open. This morning, I reached David Thrasher, a member of the ONSC board, to talk about the events of the first few months of 2013 and about today's announcement of a public capital campaign.
It's probably been a couple of months ago that we really came to the decision of the, as you say, near-death experience. It was really a suspension of operations rather than a complete stop. But, you know, we were to a point financially where we just could not see a way out. We had worked up quite a bit of debt, and our program in the past has not been self-sufficient. It's we've had to raise money for our school programs out there, and it just got to the point where it was more money than we could possibly raise, and we reached that impasse. I mean, the details are the schools were paying us about $134 per student, and it was costing us about $200 a student, and when we got up to 3,000, 3,500 students, the numbers just became absolutely more than we could raise. But as a result of that, we have really looked at our program, and we've been able to find some real savings in our program through some real great detail analyses that our board has done. And, you know, our program has become much more self-sustaining now because of that, so that was a real success. And now, with all the outpouring of support from the public and from our supporters, we've been able to embark now on this capital campaign that's going to give us real financial security as well.
Are there different sorts of stool legs to the stool of the capital campaign?
Yes, there are. We've been going through what we call a silent phase, where we've been going out to really key supporters for larger donations. We've been very successful there. And now we're opening up the public part of this campaign where anyone can step forward and make donations in any way. I mean, you can call us and send us a check, or you can go on our website, which is www.onsc.us, and you can donate on our website. And that public part of the campaign will be very important to us, not only for the money, which is exceedingly important, but also to show that we do have a lot of public support out there.
Is there a goal for the public campaign?
Yes, the goal is $1 million.
Nice and even.
Yes, absolutely. And it's going to do a lot of great things for us. It's going to set us up with some operating capital. In the past, we've had to operate through debt. We had to, you know, one of our local banks has been very good for us. It's Arvest Bank. They've been good to us and allowed us to borrow money to operate the program and then pay them back as we could. But that's just not a good way to do business. And this will allow us operating capital. It'll allow us to fund our gap between what we can collect per student and what it costs us per student. It'll allow us to do some deferred maintenance. It will allow us finally to hire a development director that will help us in future fundraising. It'll also allow us to do an assessment of our program. We've never been able to tell donors in the past the effect of our program on the students. We know it's great. We know the students go out there. We know they have a great experience, and we know that it affects the students, but we can't give a number to it. We can't put a quantity on it. And we're going to be able to do that in the future. We're going to be able to go to our supporters and to other foundations and say, look at this great effect that we are having upon the students that come to the Science Center.
You know, one of the great things about the Ozark Natural Science Center is that it's if not in the middle of nowhere, it is in what is still a pretty remote part of Northwest Arkansas.
Absolutely.
But I think one of the things that has perhaps hurt it in the past is that it's in one of the most remote parts. And so many of the people who go through are young people. I mean, fifth graders, you know, young people. And so...
Yeah, 11, 12 years old.
Uh-huh. Exposure has been limited, perhaps, to some members of the public to what has been happening there.
We feel that we are the greatest thing around that nobody knows about because of our great location. And it is wonderful for what we do to be immersed out there in the natural wilds of the Ozarks. But then again, unlike a lot of the other great causes that I try to support, nobody drives past it. Nobody sees it on a daily basis. Nobody thinks about it on a daily basis. So, and we've got some marketing to do because of that, and this capital campaign will also allow us to do that.
Is there some sense that this was a tough experience for 2013, the suspension, but because there has been so much interest, there is sort of a silver lining to what has happened in the first couple of 3 months of 2013?
At a board meeting just this past Monday night, I told our fellow board members, look, we have taken this organization that was right on the precipice of falling over into oblivion, and we are drawing it back into the forest of sustainability. And it's just been a great experience for me. I know the vote, it was a vote we had to have because we saw nothing, no other alternative. The vote to suspend operations was one of a real trying times for me. And all the support that I've seen since then and the vote by the board to continue operations has been a real success story for me.
David Thrasher is a member of the board of directors of the Ozark Natural Science Center. David, thank you so much for your time.
You're absolutely welcome.
I spoke with David Thrasher earlier this morning about the new capital campaign designed to raise $1 million for the Ozark Natural Science Center. It launched today. And in the interest of full disclosure, I did serve as the MC for the ONSC fundraiser titled Call of the Wild in Rogers last spring. This is Ozarks at Large. While man wasn't born with the natural ability to fly, perhaps mankind was first inspired to explore the art of flight after watching birds soar through the sky. As we continue examining the skies on this edition of Ozarks, our birdman Joe Neal provides a lesson in upside-down birding.
Nature defied gravity when she created nuthatches. Trees grow from the ground up. Nuthatches walk top-down. Yes, she gave us an upside-down bird. Our world was designed as a tidy package, at least in the beginning. There were all those tree trunks, as many as hairs on our heads, and they needed walking. Gravity, well, that wasn't an issue in the design phase. Trees could be walked up. Trees could be walked down. So that's where nuthatches came in. Here are several upside-down birds right now, strolling trees in the neighborhood. You may think nature just waved her magic wand back in that beginning, but it probably wasn't that easy. Gravity is not just a good idea, it's the law. So to make a nuthatch that clings to a tree head down, you make them stocky, with powerful toes and sharp claws. This puts serious cling to the bark. I really mean cling, even from underneath vertical branches. With their long, thin bills, nuthatches have a great tool to catch bugs. The idea is that all those ordinary up-the-trunk birds miss hiding bugs. Reversing traffic, our nuthatches find what was missed. Nature is economical this way. Unless, of course, you happen to be a bug. That was a white-breasted nuthatch we just heard. It's the usual one in the Ozarks. It's all over woods and town, all over forests. It seems to be doing quite well. Thank you very much. Starting last fall and all through winter and now into spring, we've had visiting red-breasted nuthatches. In place of a white vest, this nuthatch wears red. Usually, they remain way north of the Ozarks in forests of spruce and fir. But when seed crops fail, they head south in great numbers. We are having such a year in the Ozarks. We may have listeners in the southern Ozarks that have brown-headed nuthatches. It is a common bird in many southern pine forests. Go down to Little Rock, they are coming to feeders. No big deal. More than a century ago, they were common in pine forests of northwest Arkansas and even up into adjacent Missouri. Rapid logging of mature pine forests here led to their loss. Their habitat is probably the fine old pine timbers that frame my house. They have a squeaky dull call, as you can hear in this recording. If the past is guide, red-breasted nuthatches will be gone north before we are done with spring. I suppose they return north on reasonable faith. Surely firs and spruces have gotten back to work on seed production. That's the idea, anyway. With their departure, white-breasted nuthatches will again be sole proprietors of an upside-down world. They ought to have this year's crop of young nuthatches on the wing. Our woods will fill with busy sounds of hungry family groups, youngsters learning the upside-down trade.
Joe Neal is co-author of Arkansas Birds, published by the University of Arkansas Press. His latest book in the province of birds, A Western Arkansas Memoir, is published by Half Acre Press.
John Two Hawks has been performing and recording music for more than 20 years, and for many of his fans around the world, he's synonymous with the flute. For his brand new CD, Beautiful World, he does play the flute, but there are many other instruments to be heard, including his voice. Yesterday, the Grammy and Emmy-nominated composer and singer came to the Carver Center for Public Radio to talk about his new CD.
The title for the CD, sometimes it comes after. A lot of times it comes before, though. And in this particular instance, the title, we had the title a year before. And I've been working on developing the concept for this new sound for over a year and a half. And from the start, we knew the album was going to be called Beautiful World. And the interesting thing about the title on this is because it's a little bit of trickery. Because you hear Beautiful World and instantly you think of beautiful things, you think of, you know, all things light and good, right? And that's true, that is a part of it. But if you look at the actual text of the title on the cover, you can see that the letters of the word Beautiful World are kind of blown to pieces and they're kind of tattered. And so the message is kind of even hidden right in the title of the CD that, yes, it is a beautiful world, but it's broken, and there's tattered and rough edges in that beautiful world that we need to look at. And so we had the idea to do this CD just because of what we were looking around and seeing that was happening in the world. You know, there's all these tragedies that are happening and all these terrible things, and we wanted to do something musically. I wanted to do something musically that would speak to that and that would not be afraid to look into the shadows, that would not be afraid to look into the dark places of our world and say, let's reach into those places and try to shed some light on it and try to bring a good thing to those places and bring healing. And so that's kind of the message of the whole album, is that out of this parched soil, we need to kind of bury the weapons of our fear and our destruction and violence. And out of that is what will rise, that gentle flower of hope.
What you did musically, this is a bit of a new direction for you, isn't it?
Yes, it is. We you know, the whole idea a year and a half ago was to shift, and to shift into a new sound, without abandoning, you know, my previous music entirely, and without obviously abandoning the people who have supported that music and have loved it all along. And so it was a balance to figure out how to make that shift. And so the idea was to create this new music that would still speak to the same kind of feel, the same spirit, but do it in a new way. And that took a lot of effort, because, you know, anytime you've been doing something for a long while, I've cut over 20 albums in the same kind of genre. And so to be able to change it up takes a lot of effort. And so that's why it took a year and a half to do that.
I know the title track is Beautiful World, but hearing you describe what you're doing on this CD, the song For Grace seems to really be in that mode, talking about something that's horrific and let's do better.
Yeah, exactly. The title track is Beautiful World, like you said, and that speaks to the broader sense. But in the interest of being more specific, We wrote and composed the music and the lyrics for a song called For Grace, which is a song that was actually written very specifically for one of the children who perished in the terrible tragedy at Newtown, and her name was Grace. But to take it from a broader sense too, we also wrote it for all of those victims, all of their families, and all the victims of all the tragedies that we've seen happen over the course of the last year or so. And so this song is very specific and written to kind of speak to that, and it speaks to what we need to do to reach for a better world. And so it is specific in that way.
You're painting in heaven, sunsets of pink and sad colored hues. Your mother's arms are empty as she cries for you. Lay them down for grace.
There is a song here called Dream Me Free. And you look at what all the instruments that you hear on this.
Yeah.
You've got organ. You've got strings. You're singing. You've got guitars. You've got percussion. Yeah. This is John Two Hawks with a lot going on.
Yeah, it is. It sure is. And the thing with me is I'm at my heart, I am a composer. And I hear a lot of music. And so whenever I go into the studio, even on the, if people really are listening to the music on my previous albums, you can hear a lot of instrumentation going on there. And I've dreamed all that stuff up. And I've heard it in my head and executed it sometimes with my own hands, and other times I'll ask other musicians to come in and share their talents. And Dream Me Free is a great example of that.
Percussion, having guitar, having all this with you, does that allow you to explore more?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been privileged to be able to create some music for film and for movies. And having done that, I've gotten, early on I was exposed to orchestras and symphonies and those kinds of things. And so those sounds are in my head all the time. And so this music, being that it was so much more instrumental, so much more, I don't want to say instrumental, so much more musical, in that it incorporated a lot of kind of symphonic string sections, it incorporated pianos and all these other types of instruments, that it really gave it a kind of epic movie-like music, movie music feel. And so it did allow me to explore more. It allowed me to hear things. And one of the great things about working on this album is I would be in the studio and I would just kind of just blindly go through some effects or some sounds and then just kind of thunk around. And then I would hear something. Something would snap and I'd say, oh, yeah, I'm hearing this. So then I'd go find that and work on that composition and add that to the mix. So that's the one thing about working so long on this album that was wonderful, because I feel like music is like a plant. And a lot of times, because of the business side of music, you only get to grow that plant so far up before you have to kind of say, okay, now it's a finished product. And then you go on and play it for years later, and then those songs, they develop more. And so the fact that we worked on this for a year and a half gave all these songs a chance to really flesh out. It gave them a chance to develop. And so there were other parts and pieces that made it into the songs because of that time.
I don't know the year you did your first CD. It was a while ago.
Yes, yeah, it's been a while.
with that one, you then, and it was probably vinyl, right?
Oh, well, we did, when we started, was cassettes.
Okay, yes.
And those are all long gone now.
Oh, yes.
You know how that is.
Although, you know what? With some very young hipsters, like 20 and 21-year-olds, it's coming back.
I heard that.
I get vinyl coming back because you can get a richer sound. I don't know what a cassette gives you.
Yeah. I hear you.
Anyway, that's all to say that it used to be you pretty much had to have a musician in the studio with you, or at least in a studio close to you.
Right.
Now you can have someone halfway around the world.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And you get great quality, and they, what, email the tracks
to you? Incredible, yeah. I mean, we, like you say, in the early days, I remember when we were running reel to reel. My very first record I recorded in Uptown Studios, which is up north in Michigan. And that record was recorded in a studio that had this giant $90,000 board with 500,000 knobs and faders on it. And we were running that music on the reel. I'll never forget it. I still remember how to splice and all that stuff, you know.
Razor blade.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Little marker and a little razor blade and some tape. Oh, yep. I remember all that. And it's amazing to see how the technology has allowed for things to happen that would have never been possible before. For instance, on this album, we did a song called Cup of Peace. And it's a kind of a Celtic feeling song. And so I knew these two guys that were friends of mine that are fellow musicians. One of them lives in Ireland, and the other one lives in Northern England. And I wanted to collaborate with them, so we did. They never had to leave their country. They never had to leave the comfort of their own recording studio. So we just file shared everything, and I sent them what I had and told them what I was hearing and what I would like them to try and let them kind of run wild with it. And so we have Illan pipes, which are a very well-known musical instrument in the Celtic music world, which are kind of like the Irish version of bagpipes.
Okay.
That's what they are. They're called Illan pipes, and they're beautiful. They were prominently featured in the movie Braveheart. And so this Illan pipes player, he's very well-known, and he's very, very, very good. And so I was really cool when he said, yeah, he was all for it, you know. And then my buddy from Ireland, Seamus Byrne, he played the Celtic whistles on the same piece, and the same thing, we file shared. And that's how that song came to be. So it's three countries working together.
And no one had to leave.
And no
one,
one had to
buy a plane ticket.
That's right, no one had to buy a plane ticket, so it was great.
And they stood a tattered remnant with their
John Tuhawk's brand new CD is titled Beautiful World and is available at his website, johntuhawks.com. Soon, the digital version will be available through iTunes. He'll host a CD release party April 25th at the Crescent Hotel Conservatory in Eureka Springs. He'll also host his annual Mother's Day concert Sunday, May 12th at the City Auditorium in downtown Eureka Springs. For that concert, all moms are admitted at no charge.
On the next Fresh Air, the hell of American daycare. We talk with Jonathan Cohn about his cover story in The New Republic. 40% of children under 5 are in daycare, but he writes that the overall quality of daycare is wildly uneven and barely monitored, and at the lower end, it's Dickensian. Join us.
Fresh Air, tonight at 6 on KUAF.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. The University of Arkansas Theater presents the Stephen Sondheim Musical Company from April 19th through April 28th at the University Theater Fine Arts Center in Fayetteville. Tickets and more information are available at 575-3946.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Eagle Gap.
Where's that?
Eagle Gap is just north of Eagleton, which is in turn north of Mena.
Okay.
So down there in Polk County.
Polk. Yes.
Yes.
On it. Good deal.
Were you the person, Antoinette, who was yesterday asking me if there could be fun with ultra cold atoms? I can't remember if it was you or not.
It was definitely not me.
But apparently, there can be.
Oh.
Tomorrow night, the 2013 Maurer Distinguished Lecture will be held at 7:30 in Hillside Auditorium, the new classroom facility on the University of Arkansas, mm-hmm. just dedicated last week. Deborah Jin, a prize-winning experimental physicist and University of Colorado professor, is this year's lecturer. She's going to talk about fun with ultra-cold atoms.
Okay. So was it dedicated last week? I feel like it'd been a couple weeks. My time's all.
It's within the last few weeks.
Okay.
By the way, Deborah Jin will share her work exploring quantum behavior in gases of atoms and molecules cooled to temperatures near absolute zero.
That's probably one of those things that if you show it to me, I think it's really cool, but I don't understand it on paper.
Yeah. I will say, though, that...
So it's fun for me to watch, maybe.
Truth in advertising, ultra-cold atoms, if they're near absolute zero, that would be ultra-cold.
Yes, it would be.
Now, instead of very small, think big.
Okay.
The Sugar Creek Astronomical Society will host Astronomy Day 2013 at Hobbs State Park. It takes place Saturday from 4 until 6, solar observing with special safety lenses.
Sure.
6 to 6:30, discussion about moon phases. 6:30 to 7, a discussion about the scale of the solar system. That's the stuff that makes me stay awake at night. And then there is a tour of the night sky and observation beginning at 8:30 Saturday night at Hobbs State Park.
Excellent. Well, something I understand is shopping.
Yes.
And Riffraff on the Square. I noticed on their Facebook page.
In Fayetteville.
Mm-hmm, on Square in Fayetteville. It's a local boutique that they are offering anybody who buys something online or at the store today, they're going to give $1 for each sale to the Boston American Red Cross.
Okay.
So very just good. FYI.
All right. Adams, Red Cross, and the night sky.
Right. And also giving, there's some grants that were given out.
Oh, gosh, yes. Thank you for, this just came out this morning. The CARE Foundation, which is a fund of the Endeavor Foundation in Northwest Arkansas, announced today grants totaling nearly $1.9 million. It brings the total that they have given out in the course of their existence to $54 million. Some of the school districts that received money today, Decatur, Gravett, Huntsville, Siloam Springs, Springdale, as well as the Jones Center for Families, Hispanic Women's Organization of Arkansas, Schmieding Cares, and the Community Clinic of Northwest Arkansas. More on that in the next couple of days.
Excellent.
On Ozarks at Large.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Doing any big plans tonight or anything?
No.
No?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so. No baseball. It's supposed to, well, could be storms.
It could be stormy. So everybody keep an eye out for that because it has the potential to be severe, as I understand it.
Yes.
But you never know.
Naturals are off tonight. The Razorbacks are off tonight.
Oh, that's good then. Don't have to cancel the games.
That's right. Naturals start a 4-game homestand at Arvest Ballpark tomorrow night.
Yes. I'm finally going to make it out there Friday.
All right.
Very
excited. Superhero night.
It is superhero night.
I've still been thinking about.
What superhero to
be?
Okay.
Yes. And then the Razorbacks don't play again until Friday night at Baum Stadium. They will be playing Texas A&M Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday afternoon, weather permitting.
I feel ridiculous that I've not made it to a baseball game yet and a little irritated that the weather forecast looks cold. Because
yeah.
I know that cold front is moving in
right
later this week after the rains and the whatnot. But
I talked to Lori Boatwright, who's the general manager of the Fayetteville Farmers Market, earlier today.
Mm-hmm.
And she mentioned that this is a lot of people went to the markets early thinking spring corn or tomatoes because that's the case last year. That was after a mild winter and a warm spring.
Sure.
This is more traditional. You still have these cold snaps. So I know.
All right.
They'll come.
Okay, I'll quit padding.
Okay.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
Thanks so much for listening.